The fight over international aid just got more complicated. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishour, in for David Brancaccio. House Speaker Mike Johnson has attached a bill forcing the sale of TikTok to a foreign aid package, which includes money for Ukraine and Israel. The House is expected to vote on the measure this weekend. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
The House has already passed legislation requiring the Chinese company that owns TikTok, ByteDance, to sell it to resolve national security concerns. Otherwise, the app would be banned in the U.S. The new measure attached to the foreign aid package would give ByteDance more time to sell TikTok. Regardless of the timeline, TikTok says the bill would violate Americans' free speech rights, but there are concerns among Republicans and Democrats that China could access TikTok users' personal information. Senate Commerce Committee Chair Maria Cantwell, a Democrat from Washington State, has jurisdiction over the TikTok bill in the Senate. On X, she said she had recommended giving ByteDance more time to sell TikTok and now supports the updated legislation. President Biden says Congress should pass it and he would sign it. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
European Union leaders meeting in Brussels have agreed to tighten sanctions on Iranian producers of drones and missiles. This after Iran sent volleys of attack drones towards Israel in response to Israel's bombing of an Iranian consulate in Syria. The president of the European Council, Charles Michel, said everything should be done to isolate Iran. G7 foreign ministers are meeting today on the Italian island of Capri for talks on the Middle East as well as Ukraine. The BBC's Jessica Parker is there.
Allies are urging Israel to show restraint after Iran's unprecedented attack on Saturday, itself a response to a strike on an Iranian consulate. Despite calls for de-escalation, the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, has insisted his country will make its own decisions. G7 nations are looking to coordinate fresh sanctions against Tehran, while also refocusing discussions on aid to Gaza, freeing Israeli hostages, and hopes for a ceasefire. On support for Ukraine, ministers will examine long-debated plans on whether to use frozen Russian assets, alongside appeals to bolster Kyiv's air defences.
That's Jessica Parker with our editorial partners at the BBC. The United Arab Emirates is still reeling from flooding after 2 years' worth of rain fell in a day. One person died. The Dubai International Airport, the world's busiest airport for international travel, has started allowing flights back into its Terminal 1. Still, thousands of passengers remain stranded. The Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore took 5 years to build, beginning in 1972. For the workers involved, it meant overtime pay and a chance to prove themselves on a giant construction project that would go on to become a Baltimore icon. The bridge cost $110 million to build in the 70s, which translates to about $500 million today. Now, a few weeks after its collapse, workers reflect on what many consider to be a monument to their efforts. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has more.
At the Seahorse Inn, just north of the collapsed Key Bridge, 79-year-old retired ironworker Butch Henry goes behind the bar to pour himself a cup of coffee.
How you doing?
He takes it black, just like he did when he was getting up early to build the bridge. The job meant going up hundreds of feet in the air to bolt together pieces of steel.
Work was beautiful. It was the biggest job in town.
Henry lost several teeth while working on the bridge when a bolt hit him in the mouth. Still, he says the money was good, enough that he was able to take his family on vacations to the Jersey Shore. After his time as an ironworker, Henry did road work, including filling potholes, like the men who died while working on the bridge when it collapsed. He gets tears in his eyes when he talks about it.
It was unbelievable. I didn't think anything could bring that bridge down.
It also shocked one of his fellow ironworkers, 75-year-old Buddy Cephalou.
It's like, this can't be real.
Cephalou says he felt deflated, then angry, even helpless.
Having stood atop that steel, having helped to build that bridge with my two hands and back.
It was satisfying but backbreaking work. Cephalou has had 4 lumbar surgeries. But as a young man, the job was also a stepping stone to higher positions in the union.
Maybe 2 old-timers would be looking at a guy in the union hall and say, that kid worked on the Key Bridge, man. He really got around good, meaning climb iron and just be good up top on the steel.
Not everyone who worked on the bridge liked it. Panagis Galeazzato's father, Jerry, painted the metal beams on the Key Bridge.
He hated heights. And this wasn't just heights. It was like heights over water, so.
Still, after working on the bridge, Galeazzatos, a Greek immigrant, was able to move his family of four out of a one-bedroom apartment and buy a Baltimore row home. When the bridge collapsed, Galeazzatos says his dad, who now has early-onset dementia, looked like he lost a friend.
It's the same look he always had whenever he read a union letter saying someone else has passed away. We're collecting funds. It's like, I remember that guy.
Galeazzatos says that for him, the bridge was a reminder of the work his dad did.
My dad's 83. You know, I don't know how many more years I'll have with him. So it was always good to kind of be able to know, like, pieces of him will always be here because of these buildings, right? Like, I know, like, even when he's gone, if I drive somewhere, I can be like, my dad painted that.
Galeazzatos says the bridge was a symbol of the work his dad and other tradespeople did on a structure they built to serve others and one they thought would outlive them. In Baltimore, I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.